and began walking back the way they had come. When it got too dark for him or Charlie to see any more, they paused to confer. "We don't know how far they deviated from the path," Charlie pointed out, "or how deep they are now. We can't waste our last two light spells just yet. We may need them."
"I can still see a little, enough to keep us from bumping into walls or missing turns," Natalie offered. "Put your hand on my shoulder, Charlie, and Ben, put your hand on his. I'll tap your hand once if we're turning left, twice if we're turning right, and three times if I'm stopping. That way, we can also make sure we are quiet, so if there is anyone out there, they won't be able to hear us easily. Got it?"
Charlie cleared his throat.
Maybe reverse those," he suggested. "Because if we need to stop short, probably best it doesn't take three taps to let me know."
Ben couldn't help but chuckle at that.
"Yeah, he's right," he agreed.
Natalie sighed.
"Fine," she said. "One tap for stop, two for turn left, three for turn right. Ready?"
She turned back around. Ben heard a muffled gasp from his best friend and guessed that meant Natalie had taken his hand and rested it on her shoulder. Then Ben reached out for Charlie. It took him only a second to find his shoulder.
"Good to go here," he said.
And a moment later they started moving again. It was slow going now, since he and Charlie had to rely upon Natalie's guidance and be careful not to step on her. Normally, she could keep pace with either of them, or actually outstrip them, of course. But here underground, she had to go slowly, especially since they were looking for any hint of their friends. Without any light to go by, Ben lost all sense of time. They could have been walking for an hour, a day, a few minutes, or anywhere in between by the time he felt a single tap on his hand. He stopped at once, and even so nearly barreled into Charlie.
"What's going on?" he whispered.
The sound carried easily in the narrow space of the tunnel, which only made it feel more claustrophobic.
"I think I found something," Natalie answered.
Her voice came from lower to the floor, and Ben guessed that she was crouching down.
"I'm going to make some light."
A second later, he saw a faint glow right near the floor. It took him a second to figure out what she had done. She had summoned a spell into her spell shooter, causing the weapon to glow as it began to ready the spell for release, but then hadn't actually fired it. Clever. It was a tiny bit of illumination, not enough to light their path, but for scanning a spot on the ground, it was probably just enough, especially with her eyesight.
"Yes, there are scuff marks here," she reported finally,
allowing the glow to fade and, from the sound of it, rising to her feet again.
"It looks like something got dragged down this side tunnel. I would have missed it entirely, but the air smells different."
Sure enough, now that she said that, Ben could feel a faint whiff of air on his face. It felt warm and damp, like a swamp. Odd for underground, and he said so.
"Could be an underground lake or river," Charlie offered. Yeah, normally those would be colder, not warmer."
In such close proximity, Ben could feel his friend shrug.
"But maybe things work differently here."
"Well, it's where our friends went, I'm sure of it," Natalie answered. "And I don't think it was willingly."
"Then let's go find them and bring them back,"
Ben declared, anger creeping into his voice. Nothing was ever easy. He drew his spell shooter.
"Keep your weapons in hand, just in case," he suggested.
A second later, they were moving again. This tunnel was narrower than the last, enough so that Ben held up his hand and was able to brush against the wall without having to stretch at all. It was also, he noticed after some time, not as dark as it had been before.
"I can almost see again," Charlie said. "I mean, I can if I squint. So much easier knowing I'm not going to step on Natalie's feet."
"Hear, hear," Natalie agreed. "I can see clearly now too, which makes things a lot easier. There's a definite trail here, several feet going this way, but more scuff marks too."
Ben could hear the frown in her voice and knew what she was thinking. It definitely sounded like their friends had been captured. But by whom, and to what end? They continued walking, and a path was definitely lighter now, enough so they could walk without holding on to each other anymore. That allowed them to resume a more normal pace.
"It's this moss,"
Charlie reported, gesturing towards the walls. It's all over the place, and it's glowing. Not a lot, but enough to see by down here.
I'll take it, Ben replied.
He sighed, suddenly feeling the long trek.
I hope it's not too much further, though. I'm wiped.
Yeah, me too, Charlie agreed. I'd kill for a nap right now.
Here, Natalie replied, passing him something, and then something to Ben as well. It was a dried apple, and Ben eagerly bit into the tough, leathery fruit.
Best I can do right now. She paused. I'm tired too, though.
Weird. I hadn't noticed it before you said something.
It's been a long day or whatever, Ben told her. We're all feeling it. As soon as we get the others and get out of here, we'll feel better.
Right,
she answered. She started off once more. Even though they could now see well enough to not need her eyesight, Ben was happy to let Natalie take the lead here. She was quieter and more graceful than either him or Charlie. They continued to walk, and now it was not only noticeably brighter, but also much muggier. Ben guessed that Charlie had been right about some kind of underground lake. He was really feeling the fatigue now, and it was starting to take effort just to keep his eyes open and his feet moving. But he forced himself onwards. They had to find their friends. All of a sudden, Natalie stopped so abruptly, Charlie nearly stumbled into her.
Shh!
She warned in a tense whisper.
Do you hear that?
They listened closely, and after a second, Ben picked up a faint murmuring.
There's someone up ahead. A lot of someones.
Not our friends, Ben asked, and wasn't surprised when she shook her head.
Swell. All right, let's see what we've got.
The three of them crept forwards and came to a low archway. Beyond it, the rough tunnel widened and dipped into a room similar to the one they'd seen the High Council in, with a few notable differences. It was nowhere near as polished. The walls were more natural, irregular and roughly carved. The ceiling was lower. It was dimmer. The light coming from the moss that seemed to cover everything. Unlike the council's chamber, which had been bowl-shaped, this space continued outwards. The far side of it looked to be a low lake with the water lapping against the rock. But it was the structure right before that edge that drew Ben's attention. A spur of rock jutted up from the ground, everything carved away on either side to create a low, wide table, or an altar. And stretched out atop that shape were four very familiar figures.
Uh-oh, Charlie muttered beside him.
Are they?
They're alive, Natalie reported, her voice equally tense.
I can see them breathing.
She frowned.
They aren't even tied up.
So what happened to them?
Ben wondered aloud. He glanced about and started with a gasp as he suddenly realized his friends weren't alone. He had been so focused on them that he hadn't noticed the other figures in the rough chamber. They were no taller than Crowbeck, he guessed, and draped in long swathes of cloth that looked like crude robes. Around the fabric, Ben could see grey-green skin and, he squinted, what looked like scales. Between that and the broad snouts, wide lipless mouths and narrow, slit yellow eyes protruding from their hoods, he guessed that he was looking at some sort of lizard folk, and it seemed they were about to sacrifice his friends.
We have to do something, he said,
and was shocked to hear the words emerge from his mouth in a slur. What was wrong with him? The whole world seemed to tilt a little, and he rested his hand on the wall, having to struggle just to lift it that high. He was so tired.
Oh, hell,
Charlie muttered, sounding equally lethargic, and Ben raised an eyebrow. It was rare to hear his best friend curse even that much.
I think it's the moss, he reported slowly,
holding out his hand for them to see. It looked oddly sticky.
It's oozing some kind of pus or something. That may be part of the dampness we're feeling. And breathing,
Charlie sighed.
I think it's what's wiping us out so much. It's got to be some natural substance that puts people to sleep, and it's all around us.
Natalie nodded heavily.
That would explain why they aren't tied up,
she managed, her words just as sluggish.
And how they were able to get Krobek without a fight. Those lizard folk must be immune to the effects.
She frowned.
How are we going to rescue them, though? We can barely move ourselves.
Ben forced himself to think about that.
What happens if we light the moss on fire?
He managed after a second.
Would that cancel out the effect?
Charlie looked horrified.
No, don't do that,
he gasped, and his alarm was enough to jolt Ben back to full wakefulness for a second.
The fumes would be 10 times worse.
He shook his head.
Even if we did burn all of it, and it's everywhere, that wouldn't get it out of the air.
He considered their options and brightened.
But the opposite might work.
It took Ben a moment to catch on to what his best friend meant. It felt like he was drifting through a fog.
Freeze it, you mean?
Yeah,
Charlie nodded.
It's so warm down here, right? I bet this moss thrives on the humidity. Cold might kill it and clear the air a bit. Our heads, too.
It might help another way,
Natalie suggested.
Lizards don't like the cold. I bet lizard folk don't either.
That made sense. Ben remembered seeing plenty of lizards, the little tiny ones, on one of the few holidays he'd had abroad during the summer, out sunning themselves on rocks.
Right,
he agreed, excitement countering fatigue for the moment.
I've got a few cold spells loaded. I'll loose those and try to clear a path. You guys see if you can get our friends. Ready?
The others nodded, and he took a deep breath.
Okay, here we go.
Raising his spell shooter, he forced himself to work past his lethargy and coax the spell he wanted into his weapon.
Concentrate, he reminded himself. Focus on the intent, then fire.
He did, and a blinding blue light burst from his spell shooter, rocketing into the chamber beyond and spreading as it went. Everything it touched and passed turned blue-white as well, as frost spread from the spell in a wave, coating every surface with ice. In an instant, the entire chamber looked like the inside of an ice cave, and Ben breathed in deeply, sighing in relief as he straightened up, some of his fatigue falling away as cold, clean air filled his lungs and cleared his head. The lizard folk clearly disagreed, however. A series of loud, hissing roars filled the cavern as they all shook, icicles shattering from their limbs and clothes, and turned to glare up at him there in the entrance. But the cold was definitely slowing them down. Not Charlie and Natalie. The pair of them raced in, skidding and sliding their way down to the altar. The nearest lizard folk grabbed at them, but sluggishly, their clumsy attempts easy to avoid, and Natalie quickly reached the rest of the guardians, with Charlie right behind her. Krobeg was closest, and Ben saw her shake the dwarf.
"Wake up," she insisted. "We need to get out of here."
"Oh, what?"
Krobeg shook his head, ice shattering at the movement, and sat up.
"What happened?"
He glanced around, taking in the situation at once, and let out a bellow, hopping down from the altar and slamming into a lizard man that had been slowly creeping towards Charlie.
"Get back, you!"
The dwarf began shoving lizard folk away, while Charlie and Natalie woke the others and got them all moving. In minutes, they were all stumbling up towards Ben. He stood ready the whole time, spell shooter raised in case anyone tried anything else.
"I'll get her,"
Dagmar managed to gasp out as she reached him. "They took our packs. We need to..." But Charlie, who was helping her walk, shook his head.
"There's no time," he warned, gesturing behind him. "We need to go now."
Sure enough, some of the lizard folk were shaking off the cold enough to start pursuing them. They were slow right now, but Ben knew they'd recover fast once they cleared this chamber. Ben agreed, and a quick glance told him that the other guardians still had their weapons and, more importantly, their artifacts. The rest they'd have to do without.
"Come on,"
he ordered, and stepped aside so Charlie and Dagmar could squeeze past him. Natalie was right behind with Abigail and Josh, and Krobeg brought up the rear. As soon as they were past, Ben fired another spell, sealing the archway in a wall of ice. That should hold them for a bit, he stated. But just in case, let's hurry. He also knew they'd all start feeling exhausted again as the moss started working on them once more, so they had to move now while they were still energized. Fortunately, their adrenaline carried them for a while, and by the time everyone started flagging, they were almost back to the regular tunnels. The air there seemed cleaner and cooler in comparison, and Ben felt his head clear again. It was dark, and he burned through his last light spell to guide them back towards the intersection, since he worried his friends wouldn't be alert enough to manage otherwise. But soon enough, they were at that junction again, the one Krobeck had promised was a short distance from the exit itself. They stopped there to rest a moment. Ben looked at them and felt relief and pride that he'd managed to get them all out okay, although he knew they hadn't even gotten to the most dangerous part of their mission yet. Not by a long shot. Chapter 19 A Way Out. Krobeck led them confidently straight along the same tunnel they'd been following. The tunnel dipped shortly after that, however, and curved around a bend, and now they seemed to be heading back down again. When asked about it, however, the dwarf had brushed off the other's concerns. "We are fine," he promised. "This is the way out. It's just a little farther." All of them were tired, both from the after-effects of that moss and from the pace Krobeck had been setting for them, but no one wanted to complain. Ben felt it was best to put as much distance between themselves and the lizard folk as possible, in case the creatures came after them again, and he suspected everyone else felt the same. Plus they were getting farther from the High Council and their secret meeting chamber with each stride as well, and that was also a good thing. As a result, they did not even pause to rest or eat, but kept right on walking. Which was why it was only when Ben reached for his water skin to take a quick sip that he realized they might have a problem. He was walking at the back beside Natalie and Charlie, with Krobeck and Dagmar in front and Josh and Abigail next, and quickly gestured his two closest friends towards him. "Do you guys have any water left?" he asked once they'd crowded around. "A little," Natalie replied. "About half my water skin. You?" Charlie looked embarrassed.
"Maybe half that," he admitted. "What? I get thirsty."
"I've got about that much too," Ben said. "But we're the only ones. The lizard folk took everyone's gear when they grabbed them, and we were too rushed to find it and get it back."
"We didn't have a choice," Charlie said. "If we'd wasted time hunting for our packs, they'd have grabbed all of us."
Ben sighed. "I know. We did what we had to do. But my point is, we've got seven of us, and only supplies for three, and not even full supplies at that. We're going to have to ration very carefully."
Charlie considered the matter.
"Once we get out of the tunnels, we should be able to find fresh water," he said, "and probably some kind of food, too, even if it's just nuts and berries or mushrooms or whatever."
"Sure, once we're out," Ben agreed. "But how long is that going to be?"
They all looked up ahead, where Krobeck was leading the way.
"If it's today, that's fine. If it's not, well, we may have a problem."
Natalie nodded.
"I'll do my best not to eat or drink any more than necessary," she promised, "and we'll just hope for the best."
With that agreed, the three friends hurried to catch up to the rest of their group. But the best, which would have been an exit out of the tunnels, failed to materialize. Instead, after what must have been several more hours and could have been as much as another full day of walking, Dagmar called a halt.
"We need to take a break," she declared, and even she sounded a little ragged.
"What? Nonsense! We're almost there," Krobeck insisted.
The dwarf didn't look tired at all, but then the breastplate gave him increased stamina as well as strength.
"Still," he admitted, leaning against the nearest wall, "I could do with a quick bite, I suppose."
Ben stepped forwards.
"We'll have to share what we have,"
he said, indicating to himself Charlie and Natalie.
"Water, too. But I need to know exactly how much longer before we get out of these tunnels. An hour? An afternoon? A day?"
Krobeck snorted.
"Nothing like that, I assure you," he stated confidently.
Under the collective stare of his friends, he eventually dipped his head and added,
"At least, I don't think so,"
mumbling that last part into his silver beard.
So you don't actually know how much longer? Josh demanded. Do you even know if we're going the right way?
Yes, of course we are, the dwarf snapped. I have an instinct for this sort of thing. All dwarves do.
He deflated again, almost instantly.
Though, I should admit, I don't actually know how far away we are, how long it'll take us to get there, or if there's a faster way to go.
Everyone had gathered around now, and Ben could tell they were getting worried. It was one thing to die fighting, but getting lost in an underground tunnel and slowly dying of hunger or thirst was another.
So you have no idea where we are going, or how much longer it'll take? Natalie asked, exasperation clear in her voice.
Out of all of them, Ben knew she hated being underground the most.
It can't be too much farther, the dwarf insisted plaintively. Can it?
Ben turned his attention to Dagmar.
Can the boots help us here? He asked.
The stocky master of apprentices considered.
I don't know, she replied after a moment. Thus far, they've not given any clear guidance within these tunnels, but I will try.
She shook her head.
Perhaps we should all eat something and get some rest first. If it does work, I don't know exactly how it will take shape, so it's best if we're ready for anything.
Ben didn't have anything to say to that, so he silently divvied up half of what was left of his food and water between himself, Josh, and Abigail. Natalie did the same with Dagmar, and Charlie split his with Crowbeg. It wasn't much for anyone, but at least it was something. When they'd all finished, Ben, Natalie, and Charlie set out their bedrolls and got some sleep. What felt like only minutes later, Ben found Josh shaking him awake.
Sorry, man, Josh told him, but Dagmar says it's time to switch.
Yeah, all right, Ben agreed. He dragged himself to his feet and leaned against a wall, still half asleep, as Josh tried to get some rest. Natalie and Charlie replaced Dagmar and Abigail on watch. Crowbeg had insisted that he would be fine with only the breastplate to sustain him. After a few hours, Dagmar aroused. It was as if she had some sort of internal alarm, Ben thought. He wished he had that knack. It would certainly make getting up in time for class a lot easier. That made him think about classes and the Institute, and he felt a surprising pang of homesickness. He hadn't even realized before now how much the Institute had become his home, and how comforting he'd found the schedule of classes and training. He couldn't help wondering if they'd ever go back to that again.
All right, Dagmar declared, her quiet words still reaching all of them easily in the still air of the tunnel, and rousing Ben from his dark thoughts. Stay back while I attempt this.
The others all gave her some space as she stepped a little way ahead of them and then stopped. From where he was, Ben could only see that she was standing completely still, her eyes shut but not squeezed so. She looked relaxed, actually, like she was meditating, and he suspected she was attempting to commune with the boots. He hoped it worked. After a moment, Ben noticed that it seemed to be getting brighter in the tunnel. Then Natalie gasped.
She's glowing, she declared, pointing at Dagmar.
Sure enough, their stocky instructor had begun to give off a soft white glow. It was brightest around the boots, but as Ben watched, the glow spread to cover her completely and slowly intensified until he could no longer look directly at her. Then the glow suddenly shot out in front of her, forming a glowing corridor that led forward down their current tunnel, but then took a sharp left turn at a side corridor he hadn't even noticed before. All at once, Dagmar started moving, marching quickly down the newly lit path.
Let's go!
Ben shouted, hoisting his pack and hurrying after her. The others did the same. But the stocky director of apprentices proved too quick for them. Her pace was such that even jogging, Ben could not keep up. Nor did she show any sign of slowing, even when he and the others all shouted at her. It didn't even look as though she had heard them. In moments, she was too far ahead for any of them to catch up. A few minutes after that, she had vanished completely from view.
Great! Josh huffed between pants as he tried to keep up. What do we do now?
But Charlie surprised them all by laughing.
We follow her, of course, he replied, and he pointed the way she had gone.
The blindingly bright corridor had disappeared as Dagmar had moved through it, as if it were lighting her way alone. But there was still a faint glow remaining. In the darkness of the tunnels, that glow was more than bright enough for them to follow without difficulty.
Nice,
Ben clapped his best friend on the shoulder. Okay, everybody, keep moving. We don't know how long this thing will last.
Despite that, they were all in good spirits as they set out again. Part of it was simply having enough light to see where they were going. But Ben knew it was also the reassurance that the boots would show them a proper way out. This was Elizabeth's armour they were talking about. It wouldn't fail them. They continued to jog steadily, following the path. Once Ben glanced back and saw that the glow behind them had faded to the point where he could barely make it out. That was good. If anyone was trailing them, it wouldn't do to leave such clear markers. But even though the glow ahead did fade a little over time, it was still more than enough for them to keep going without any hesitation. They didn't stop to rest or to eat or drink. Instead, they shared what was left of the food and water as they went. No one complained. They didn't want to risk the glow vanishing and leaving them stranded just because they decided on a break. Everyone was tired, and their pace eventually began to lag. But every time it did, Charlie urged the rest of them on.
"Come on," he said cheerfully. "We're almost there."
Ben was impressed. Normally his best friend was the first one to complain, so to watch him encouraging everyone else and staying so relentlessly optimistic was uplifting. The path did eventually start leading upwards again, which gave them all a bit of a boost. Then they rounded a corner and found themselves facing a solid wall.
"What?" Josh blurted out. "You've got to be kidding."
But there was no question about it. The glowing path led straight to that barrier. And now that he looked more closely, Ben saw that it wasn't the only light visible.
"Check it out," he said, pointing.
When they saw what he meant, relief spread through the small party. Daylight around the wall's edges. It was the way out at last. Ben stepped up to the wall and ran his hands over the rock. "There must be a hidden catch here somewhere," he muttered, searching the rough surface. "We just have to find it." But he didn't see anything, and the wall remained steadfast and silent.
"Let me try," Krobeck suggested.
He gently shouldered past, and Ben stepped back to give his dwarven friend access. Then he watched as Krobeck went through the same process he had, but at what for Ben was about waist level. Of course, Ben realized watching him, this pass had been built by dwarves, so it made sense that they'd have put the panel or lever or whatever it was at their own height. Sure enough, after a few minutes, Krobeck grinned, and Ben heard a loud click.
"Got it!"
Then the dwarf quickly hopped back a pace as the entire wall began to swivel outwards.
"Be ready for anything," Ben warned, drawing his spell shooter and his sword. "Just in case."
The others nodded and drew their weapons as well. But when the wall had stopped moving, creating a nice wide entrance, they heard nothing but the sound of air moving across the entry, and saw nothing but grass, trees and sky. Still, Ben advanced slowly, stepping just outside and stopping there, blinking to let his vision adjust. What he saw once he'd acclimatized was a small clearing at the edge of a forest. There was a cliff behind him, though not as steep as the ones they'd been navigating before the tunnels. This was clearly the start of the mountain range they'd been in before, and practically a foothill compared to what it became on the far side. They were finally back outside. Chapter 20. Don't Look Down.
"No sign of Dagmar,"
Natalie reported a few minutes later. She, Josh and Krobeck had gone to scout a little way ahead in different directions, while Ben stayed back with Charlie and Abigail.
"But there's a nice little stream not far from here."
She already looked so much happier to be outdoors again. Ben could hardly blame her. Every breath felt like a revelation now, and even though the bright sunlight still made his eyes hurt, he didn't want to look away.
"Nothing that way either,"
Krobeck announced as he returned. He had gone east and Natalie had gone south.
"I've built something," Josh stated when he returned shortly after the other two. "Not Dagmar, but her trail. It's harder to see out here, but it's definitely there."
He gestured behind him to where two trees had grown a short distance apart, and Ben saw that the other boy was right. If he squinted a little, he could see that there was a faint glow between them, and it continued deeper into the forest.
"Okay, time to move then," he declared. "We don't want to risk the path fading away on us."
"But what about the water? Natalie asked. We really need it.
Ben had to think fast.
You and Josh go fill everyone's water skins, he decided after a second. Then come after us. We'll keep our eyes open for you too.
He hated dividing the group, especially after what had happened the last time. But she was right. They needed water, and who knew how long it would be before they found any again. Natalie and Josh were both fast, so they should be able to catch up without any trouble, he hoped. He and Charlie gave her their water skins and then headed down the path with Krobeck and Abigail. Ben resisted the urge to turn around and watch as the forest enveloped him and caused his friends to vanish from view. He'd see them again soon. No sooner had they entered the forest proper than Charlie gave a happy little cry. Look, he said, pointing at a nearby tree. It had broad, flat, green leaves divided into three parts, and thumb-sized, teardrop-shaped purple fruits budding all around. Figs! Some of the branches were low enough to the ground that Charlie could jump and snag them, and he did so, yanking a handful of the fruits from the nearest. He showed them to Ben and the others, shouting again, Figs! Before taking a big, juicy bite out of one. Ben accepted one cautiously. This was an island in the Unseen Kingdoms, after all, and Sakdar's home base in particular. But it certainly looked like a fig. He bit into it and grinned as the sweet stickiness exploded in his mouth. Grab what you can, he instructed everyone. And if you see anything else edible, collect that too. But don't let it slow you down. We need to catch up to Dagmar. At least they wouldn't starve. By the time Natalie and Josh rejoined them, Ben and the others had collected not only figs, but oranges, almonds, and apricots. And just as Natalie was handing Ben his full water skin, he spied a tall, slender tree with white bark, finger-sized green leaves, and clusters of red fruit like apples, but larger. Look, he said. Natalie followed his gesture. When she turned back, she was beaming. I love pomegranates. In an instant, she had scaled the tree like a monkey and was back down on the ground, carrying an entire armload of them. Ben noticed Charlie wasn't smiling anymore and was looking around with a frown on his face. What's up? He asked. Charlie gave a start and shrugged. I just imagined the Dark Elf homelad would be more, well, you know, dark, grim, lifeless. But it looks like any other beautiful place in the mountains, with plenty of fruit and spring water. Ben had been thinking the same thing. Yeah, I had that thought. But it's not a book we're in, is it? It's not Mordor in The Lord of the Rings or The Blight in The Wheel of Time. It's just another part of the world that happens to be run by a proper nut job. Charlie grinned at Ben's mention of two of his favourite books. Ben hadn't read them, but Charlie had talked about them enough that he may as well have.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Between the food and the water, everyone was in a very good mood when they topped another rise and spotted a short, stocky figure sitting on a downed tree trunk waiting for them. The sunlight, filtering down through the forest canopy, sparkled on her silver boots.
Took you long enough, was all Dagmar said as they joined her.
But she allowed herself a small smile as Charlie handed her a full water skin and Abigail offered her a handful of fruits.
Been busy, I see.
So have you, Ben replied, delighted that the entire group was now back together again. We lost sight of you completely. If not for the trail you left behind, we'd never have made it out.
She frowned.
I had no control over how fast I was going, she explained, rising to her feet. But I did insist the boots leave that path for you to follow. I'm glad it worked.
It did, and now we're safely out of there, Charlie agreed. Where to now?
For an instant, Dagmar stared off into the distance. Then she pointed.
We go that way, she answered.
The group set out again. They were still maintaining a healthy pace, but Ben didn't see any reason to run anymore. He also decided, once the sun fell below the horizon, that they really needed to get some sleep. All of them.
I agree, Dagmar said. We've been marching for days now, seems like, but we should sleep in shifts, even so.
That made sense, so Ben organized them into three watches. He, Charlie and Josh took the first shift, then Natalie and Dagmar, followed by Abigail and Krobeck. Ben managed to stay awake by pacing around their little makeshift campsite, but the second Natalie took over, he lay down and was asleep almost instantly.
When he woke up the next morning, Ben felt more refreshed than he could remember being in a long time. Everything seemed brighter, more positive. Amazing what a good night's sleep could do. Still, he worried about how long this was taking them. They had no idea how the war was going back home, or what Suktar had planned. He didn't dare ask Abigail to check again, not after what happened before. "How much longer do you think it will take for us to get there?" he asked Dagmar, once they'd all nibbled fruit and had some water, and started on their way again. She shrugged. "No idea," she admitted. "The boots tell me the direction, not the distance." She glanced up at Ben. "We will get there as soon as we can," she assured him. "No sense worrying about it." Ben wasn't very satisfied with that answer. He didn't have a choice but to accept it. By midday, the forest had thinned a bit, the ground becoming rockier again. Ben hoped they weren't about to run into more mountains or more tunnels, but they didn't seem to be ascending. Appearances were deceiving, however, because when they eventually emerged from the trees, he saw they were standing atop a steep cliff, and there was only a thin rope bridge linking it to the equally severe slab of rock on the other side.
"Let me guess. We have to cross that," Charlie said. "Splendid! That thing looks like a bad action movie just waiting to happen."
"We do need to get to the other side," Dagmar agreed. She frowned, studying the frayed ropes and worn boards of the bridge.
"Best if we go one at a time."
"I'll go first," Ben offered. He figured that's what a leader should do. But as he stepped up to the bridge, he had to gulp and force himself to keep moving. Then, just as he reached the thick wooden post anchoring the bridge at their end, he made the mistake of looking down. The rock here fell away as if it had been sliced clear by a massive blade, almost perfectly flat and smooth. The corners near his feet looked sharp enough to cut with. And down below, Ben thought he could make out a thin silver ribbon. A river? If so, it was either no wider than his little finger, or a really long way down. He gulped and forced his eyes back up and across to the far side of the ravine. "You can do this," he told himself, as he forced his foot off the rock and onto the first plank. "You can do this. One foot in front of the other and don't look down." His hands clamped onto the ropes on either side in a death grip, and he slowly, carefully made his way, step by step, not looking at anything except that other side. Then all at once, his foot found itself on solid ground again, and his hands were resting on the top of two more thick posts. He'd done it. Ben took a second to catch his breath and compose himself before he turned around to see the rest of the group staring at him.
"Piece of cake,"
he called out, though the way his voice broke betrayed him a little.
"Come on, who's next?"
"You ready, Charlie?" Natalie asked, stepping up to the bridge. "First me, then you, right?"
And without waiting for an answer, she headed across. Natalie had always been the most graceful of them. She strolled across the rope bridge like it was nothing, her light steps barely swaying it at all. When she reached the other side, though, Ben noticed that her hands were trembling.
"Did anyone see?"
she whispered to him, and he smiled. "Not a one," he promised. She was all smiles and confidence again as she faced the others.
"Okay, Charlie," she called. "Your turn."
Charlie looked a lot less happy about this as he approached the rope.
"Did I happen to mention I'm not that keen on heights?"
He stood there for a bit, looking at the bridge, and then squeezed his eyes shut. Taking a deep breath, he started walking rapidly while keeping his eyes straight ahead. Ben decided not to point out that Charlie probably weighed as much as him and Natalie together and wasn't exactly known for his agility. Instead, he cheered his best friend on as Charlie started out, walking hesitantly but quickly. He made it halfway before he looked down.
"Oh,"
Ben heard Charlie gasp.
"Oh, dear."
He'd gone deathly pale, and he stopped right there in the middle, the bridge swaying beneath him and the ropes twisting this way and that.
"Charlie!"
Ben wanted to scream, but forced himself to keep his tone calm. No sense spooking his friend even further.
"This is no time for a nap, Charlie. Come on, we're waiting."
Charlie nodded vigorously and forced his eyes open. As Ben had hoped,
The silly joke made Charlie glance up and focus on him and Natalie, rather than the ravine beneath his feet.
What? Oh, yeah, right.
And as Ben watched, holding his breath, Charlie started moving again.
You had me worried there,
Ben told him, after his best friend had crossed safely and was standing beside him.
Seriously, don't do that again.
Charlie shuddered.
Don't make me do that again, and it's a deal, he promised.
Josh was next, and he was already a third of the way across, when Natalie gasped and gripped Ben's arm.
I heard something, she whispered.
What kind of something? Ben asked, turning to scan the trees that started up again just beyond the ravine. Guards? Animals? What?
No,
she hissed, her grip tightening and forcing him to look back at the bridge.
Ropes!
Ben squinted, studying the bridge, and after a moment he saw what she meant. One of the ropes was starting to fray, and a strand had already snapped free. That must have been what she heard.
Hurry it up, Josh,
he called out, but the other boy just waved him off.
I'm going as fast as I can,
Josh snapped, his eyes on the planks ahead of him. Which is why he didn't see the way that one rope was unravelling faster and faster.
Run!
Charlie shouted suddenly.
Now!
Sensing the urgency in Charlie's voice, Josh threw caution aside and broke into a sprint. As his foot touched down, there was a loud twang, and the one rope snapped completely. That left only the one guide rope and the two holding the planks on either side. But it put extra stress on all three of those, and Ben could already see them starting to go as well.
Hurry!
He urged. Josh was running flat out now, his feet slamming down hard with each step and shaking the entire bridge. He had made it roughly two-thirds of the way across when the plank rope below that guide rope also gave way, followed immediately by the second guide rope, and the entire bridge plummeted into the ravine, taking him with it.
Josh!
Ben raced to the edge, gripping the post so he could lean out and see. When his brain registered what he was looking at, he was able to breathe again. Half of the bridge was dangling against their side of the ravine, still held by that single rope, and Josh was clutching onto it for dear life.
Hang on, Natalie called. We'll get you out of there.
She turned and glanced at Ben and Charlie.
Okay,
she said quickly, her eyes wide.
How do we get him out of there?
I've got a rope,
Charlie offered, digging it out of his pack. So did Ben and Natalie, in fact. The problem, Ben realized at once, was twofold. How could they secure the rope so it would hold Josh's weight, and then they pull him up once they had? If Josh had been gripping those guide ropes the way Ben had when he'd crossed, surely his arms were already starting to feel weak. There was no way he'd be able to pull himself up. Natalie was already shaking her head.
I don't think that's going to work, she said. But we've got to do something. If he falls...
She didn't have to finish that statement. Ben stared at the ground. If only they could reach through and grab him that way, he thought. That would be a lot safer than dragging him up the side. And then he realized that maybe they could.
I've got an idea,
he told his friends, drawing his spell shooter and pointing it at the ground. Get that rope ready. Then, summoning up the spell he wanted, he concentrated and fired. Immediately, the ground at his feet began to crack. First, it was small fissures, but then those ran together and formed a large split, going deeper and deeper. Ben concentrated, shaping the crack, forcing it out towards the side just to the left of where the shattered rope bridge hung. When it finally burst through the cliff wall, he was pleased to see that Josh was dangling right beside it.
Toss him that rope, Ben ordered, through the crack.
Then he leaned over the side.
Josh, get ready to catch!
Charlie did as instructed, and the rope end leapt forwards and nearly hit Josh in the head.
Hey!
He managed to yelp, but reached out and caught the rope before it could fall away.
Got it!
Okay!
Ben shouted down.
We're going to pull you into this gap. When we do, let go of the bridge.
If you say so.
He could hear the fear in the other boy's voice, but Josh didn't hesitate. With all three of them tugging on the rope, they were able to swing him into the fissure Ben had created, and as soon as his feet had cleared the edge, Josh released the remnants of the rope bridge. He fell, but only a few feet, landing on solid rock. From there, it was simply a matter of hauling on the rope as Josh began to pull his way up and out of the crack. When he finally emerged beside them, sweaty and dusty, they enveloped him in a hug.
Ben felt Josh's body shaking slightly and led him to a nearby rock to sit down. After a few moments, Joshua looked up at them.
Guys, thanks. There was a minute there, I thought it was all over.
He took a deep breath and slowly let it out. Ben clapped him on the back and gave him what he hoped was a reassuring smile. We wouldn't let that happen. Besides, who will have my back against the big bad guy when we finally get to his hiding place? Joshua smiled and shook his head.
No matter what comes of this, I know I've got friends that I can trust, literally with my life.
They sat there for a few minutes, letting the adrenaline fade. Finally, Charlie pushed out his cheeks, picked up a small stick, and threw it towards the canyon.
I don't suppose anybody packed an extra bridge, he asked feebly.
Ben got up and walked to the edge of the canyon, looking across at the others. He could hardly make out their faces from here. Peering in both directions, it was clear there was definitely no way to cross any place close. He punched his hand and his fist, a burst of frustration hitting him as the immediate urgency faded.
Just what we didn't need!
Turning back to the others, he was determined to solve the situation.
Charlie, I need you to try to remember the geographical region around here. There has to be a way we can...
Out of nowhere, a bright glowing orb flew into the middle of them with a soft bang. Ben threw himself onto Natalie and Charlie, and they came crashing down. Suddenly, a voice came out of the orb.
Ben, I know exactly where we are. It will take us 2 days to get to the next bridge.
It was Dagmar's voice coming from the orb. Ben scrambled up, and they closed in on the floating bright light.
Stay there if you can, but I won't be surprised if you have to move on. That area is dangerous because of the wildlife and the patrolling dark elves.
Ben had heard of spells like this, but never seen them. They were used as messengers for political purposes and in times of war.
Don't worry about us, Dagmar's voice continued. The boots are leading us in a westerly direction. If you have to move, head towards the setting sun and you should be on course. We'll be going in the same general direction, and we can meet up in a small city that is a few days away. Good luck.
The orb dimmed, then went out entirely and dropped to the ground. Ben bent down and picked it up. It was warm to the touch. Before he could decide to stay or go, he heard another sound in the distance. Charlie had obviously heard it too. An echoing roar.
Ben, much as I hate to say this, it sounds like we should get moving straight away. No time like the present and all that.
Ben sighed. There wasn't anything he could do. He nodded, waved to his three distant companions, and then turned to the three standing around him.
Right, he declared. I guess we'd better go.
For the first time, the party was truly separated. And Ben was all too aware that their guide, as well as their strongest warrior, were on the other side of that deep ravine. Chapter 21 Pigs and Wolves.
This side feels different, Charlie commented as they trudged along. They had been walking for only a short while, perhaps an hour, but they had long since lost sight of the ravine and the mountains behind it, as well as their friends, but Ben tried not to dwell on that.
Yeah, I guess, he answered, not paying all that much attention as he pushed a branch away from his face. Then he jumped back as part of the branch rose up hissing and flicking a long, thin, forked tongue at him.
Ah! There are a lot more snakes, that's for sure, he complained, ducking carefully beneath the branch and its agitated denizen.
That's part of what I mean, though, Charlie continued. Normally, he would have been completely panicked about the snake, but he was clearly in scholarly mode, and when that happened, Ben often thought his best friend could walk through a battlefield without even a hint of worry.
Snakes like that are more appropriate to a much cooler forest, one where the trees lose their leaves yearly. Look around you. He gestured to some of the trees they were passing. Oak, elm, birch, fir, pine, or at least close enough.
Surprisingly, it was Josh who replied.
Yeah. All the ones on the far side were more Mediterranean, weren't they? The taller boy asked. All those fruits we picked, those were the sort of thing you'd find in Greece, maybe? Now it's more like we're at home in England.
Ben paused and considered their surroundings.
What the others had said was true. The trees here were taller, heavier and darker than they had been on the far side, clumped together more closely and with a thicker canopy that blocked out all but stray patches of sunlight. The ground was littered with pine needles and the air smelled like Christmas.
Okay, that is weird, he agreed. Then he shrugged. But it's the Unseen Kingdoms, I guess. It doesn't have to make sense, at least not to us.
Charlie frowned at that.
Aren't you even the least bit curious how such a small island can have two completely different environments? He asked.
Not really, Ben admitted. Look, you can study up on it when all this is over and we're back at the Institute, okay? Right now, I just want to find Suktar and be done with all this.
A loud, low squeal cut off any other answers. All four of them jumped and started peering about, trying to figure out where that noise had come from.
What was that? Josh whispered.
At a guess, Charlie replied, it sounded a lot like a pig.
A pig? Ben put that together with what they'd just been discussing and felt his knees go weak. Oh, hell. Climb a tree. Hurry! He turned to the nearest tree, a sturdy oak, but its lowest branches were much too high for him to reach. The next tree over was a birch, however, and its trunk split perhaps 6 feet up. Ben grabbed hold of the tree's smooth, silvery bark and quickly started hauling himself up.
What's the problem? Natalie asked. She had already scaled a nearby elm and was perched comfortably on a broad branch some 8 feet off the ground.
Why are we running from a pig?
Because it isn't a pig, Ben replied between gasps. He'd reached the split and set his feet there so he could push off and climb still higher. He stopped only a few feet later, though, when the branch began to bend under his weight. This would have to be high enough. Now that he was situated, he checked on Josh and Charlie. Both of them had also climbed up at once and were also now tree-born, the four of them arrayed in a rough semicircle some 10 feet wide. He turned to finish answering Natalie. It's a... Another squeal interrupted him, and then its source burst from the undergrowth and charged straight for them. It was indeed a pig, if pigs were 5 to 6 feet at the shoulder, covered in thick brown bristles and sporting a pair of long, viciously sharp tusks. The creature wasted no time ramming these into the base of Ben's birch tree, which shook from the impact.
Boar! Charlie gasped. Man, that is one big boar!
He shot Ben a surprised look.
How do you know?
The tone was almost accusing, as if Charlie couldn't contemplate his best friend figuring something out before him. Ben would have laughed if he weren't clinging on for dear life.
You know how many times I've read things like Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, where they go boar hunting? He reminded Charlie. English forest and loud pig noises equal boar.
His tree shook under another onslaught. Now we just need to figure out how to deal with it.
We're the guardians of Elizabeth's legacy, Josh stated, sarcasm dripping from his words. Surely we are capable of dealing with a giant pig. Though Ben noticed that the older boy wasn't jumping down to face the beast either.
We should be, Natalie commented.
She'd been more surprised than the rest, which made sense now that Ben thought about it. She'd grown up in Ossium, near Italy, after all. English forests were still new to her, as were their wildlife, but she loved animals and was a quick study.
Boars are extremely dangerous, and this one looks unusually large, she said. Those tusks can tear through armor, and their own hide is almost impossible to pierce.
How do we kill it, then? Josh asked.
Ben thought he knew the answer to that one. In most boar hunts, they carry long spears with heavy crossguards, he answered. You set the spear when the boar charges and catch him through the belly. The crossguard keeps him from running himself all the way through to get at you.
He shuddered. It's pretty grisly, really, and we don't exactly have a spear handy.
Charlie was shaking his head.
Can't we be a little less violent? It's just a boar.
Natalie, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't you becoming quite proficient at the illusion spell collection?
Natalie glanced up, a curious look in her eye.
You know how much time I spent on it. It's a vital tool in the trade department, to be able to show different locations. Why?
Ben watched his friend, who had that look he got when he was solving some puzzle or other. Charlie went on.
Do you remember that class we took on various wildlife? We had to start with basic creatures. Deer, horse, cow, pig. Do you think you could do an illusion of a pig?
Charlie had a twinkle in his eye.
And its mating cry?
Ben let out a laugh, and Natalie gave a cheeky grin.
Why, Charlie, I do believe that is something I could pull off.
Joshua was smiling now as well. I'd like to see this. Natalie's smile faded as she pulled her spell shooter out and concentrated. They fell silent to allow her the best chance of success. Although it might look simple, an illusion spell was one of the hardest to carry out. The spell she selected moved slowly, but Natalie didn't seem to notice. She was staring at a point further away, and as the boar slammed into Ben's tree again, the spell finally launched. Ben clung to the branch and squinted, trying to make out anything. For a second, he thought it hadn't worked, but then, coming out of the shade was a huge pig. She moved closer, snorted a few times, and then squealed. The boar stopped attacking the tree and turned around. Snorting loudly, it trotted over, only to watch the pig run away. It snorted and squealed itself and ran after. Ben finally let out a huge breath, followed by Joshua bursting out laughing. Now that was the funniest thing I've seen in a while. Charlie looked suitably impressed.
That was amazing, Natalie. I don't think I've ever seen an illusion that real.
Natalie smiled.
Actually, that was a level 4 illusion spell. I'll tell you more about it later, but for now, I don't want to be here when that thing comes back.
The others agreed, and quickly they continued on their way, though not without a few quick glances back to make sure the boar had not returned. Ben was starting to wish this forest had stayed more like its counterpart. There, the worst they'd had to worry about was eating too much fruit. Over the course of the next day, they encountered several more animals, both natural and magical. Some they spotted early enough to simply avoid. Others they had to hide from. A few they were forced to outwit. When there was no other way out, they resorted to force, though that was the quartet's last choice. Ben hadn't realized how much they had come to rely upon Krobeck for his strength. But without the dwarf here, and with limited spells left in their spell shooters, he and the others agreed they should fight and use magic in general as little as possible. Natalie proved to be their saving grace in all of this. Charlie might have known more about most scholarly subjects, but when it came to the animal kingdom, Natalie had him beat. She was able to tell them about each animal they encountered, including what it ate, whether it was dangerous, if it had any weaknesses, and how to avoid upsetting it. Without her, Ben, Charlie, and Josh would have been goners. Even so, Ben found himself saying, "Are you nuts?" when they heard whimpering, and she said she wanted to investigate it. "Whatever that is, it sounds like it's hurting, which means it could lash out at you, too. Why go near it if we don't have to?"
"Then you three stay here," Natalie replied. Her tone was firm, unyielding. "But whatever that is, yes, it sounds hurt, and I can't leave it that way if I can help it."
Then, without waiting for a reply, she ducked under his arm, stepped around a neighbouring tree, and disappeared from view. Ben sighed.
"Great."
He glanced at the other two boys, who both shrugged. "All right, fine," he grumbled, and set off after her, Josh and Charlie at his heels. Whatever Natalie wound up facing, she wouldn't be alone. Ben wasn't sure that had been a wise decision, though, when he emerged a few minutes later in a small clearing. Natalie was a few paces ahead of him, and perhaps 10 feet from her, on the clearing's far side, was a wolf. But this wolf was the size of a horse. It was also pinned by part of a tree trunk, Ben realized. A large oak had split, and half had fallen on the massive creature, trapping it.
"We need to free it," Natalie whispered over her shoulder, edging out into the clearing.
The wolf heard her and glanced up, its whimpers replaced by a low growl as its eyes narrowed. It bared its teeth.
"Shh, I'm not here to hurt you, girl," Natalie promised, her voice low and soothing. "I want to help, okay? Will you let me help you?"
The wolf continued to growl, but its ears were swiveling about now, listening to her talk.
"That's it," Natalie crooned. "I'm going to move that mean old tree, okay?"
The wolf closed its mouth and licked its lips, then let out a small yip. Natalie smiled.
"That's right," she said gently. "I'm a friend, girl. I'll get you free."
Ben stayed where he was at the edge of the clearing with the others. The wolf had looked their way once or twice, but then returned its attention to Natalie, which was fine with him. The last thing he wanted to do was spook the enormous animal.
As he watched, Natalie finished crossing the distance. She held out her hand to the wolf, and it sniffed her palm, and then licked